I think it's good. Did you want to try, like, where we do?
Yeah, that might work.
You might want to move that, like, in the middle of both of you if you're going to make it.
So it is currently recording?
Yeah, if the red light is solid.
Okay, no, if it's blinking or yet. Okay. Okay, so let's start off with our first question. Can you tell me a little bit about the town that you grew up in?
Yeah, sure. But ask me who I am.
Oh. What is your name?
Bennett Goldstein.
When were you born?
October 1985. Do I have to give a day?
No, you don't have to give a day. You don't have to be that specific. And where are you originally from?
Lexington, Kentucky.
Wow, that's quite far away.
It is.
Can you describe it, sort of?
Well, let's see. Lexington is about 9-hour drive from Madison. I was born there and then grew up for 17 years. And I think of it as the center of the state is bluegrass country. So it's where you get a lot of horse farms outside the city. Lexington itself is about 2.5 times the size of Madison. Very similar with respect to being a college town. The University of Kentucky is there. It's also, which is also about 40,000 for its as a university. Horse industry is big there. Tobacco farms used to be like in the 70s and 80s. And then Appalachian craft is actually fairly large. So the center of the state is more rolling green hills. Henry Clay's home is there. Eastern Kentucky is Appalachia, and then Western Kentucky is like Southern Illinois, like flat, you know, farm-ish land.
Okay. How would you sort of describe sort of the social atmosphere of your hometown, or your culture in Kentucky, the Kentucky sort of Lexington culture?
Well, it's definitely the Bible Belt, so you find a lot of people who are Baptist or Methodist. It's not uncommon among the more conservative to be, you know, hi, how are you, what's your name, what church do you go to? And, like, that's not unheard of. In high school, I was told once that I was going to hell because I'm Jewish. As Jews, we don't believe that Jesus was the Messiah and that we don't believe the Messiah has come at all. So we're still waiting, but for the first time as opposed to Christianity for the second time. But he was considered a prophet, I think, or a rabbi, or like a sagacious rabbi. Let's see. So yeah, it's Christian, no liquor sold on Sundays, nothing open on Sundays, things close at 9 p.m. during the week. They're dry counties, so it's like remnants of prohibition. Like every other county is like no liquor in the county at all. So you have to cross county lines to purchase it. But Kentucky counties are very small. Like we have like 140 of them. And then I'm trying to think what else socially. I was one of four Jews in my high school, 1400. Being gay obviously has some problems in the state. Namely, I would say isolation, and it's not spoken about, and if it is, it's in a conservative context. However, so that's one side of it. But Kentucky is also it has, like, in Louisville and Lexington, the two largest cities, I'm from the second largest, which is Lexington, are, like, little liberal bubbles inside of a fairly conservative state. Let's see, what am I trying to say? Oh, so for example, Lexington actually elected its first openly gay mayor a couple of years ago. And I actually got to meet him when I was in college in like 2006, 2007, and I had a mohawk. And I didn't know, because I was going through a breakup and I was trying like any remedy that could possibly make me get over this boy. And so including funky hairdos. But anyway, so I met the mayor while looking ridiculous and being a big hot mess. So it has liberal elements, and historically, like, the state has always been, you know, influxes of liberalism and then conservative outlier areas. And then the last thing. So the horse industry is huge. So Kentucky Derby is in Louisville. Lexington is where the horses live. The horse farms, like, we're talking, like, they're like horse mansions. The stables are, like, these gorgeous, like, wooden barns. But, like, the inside, like, they're, like, varnished and painted with trimmings and... like the horses live in absolute luxury, and because they're from all over the world, like you'll have Saudi sheiks, you know, from the United Arab Emirates, you know, have their horses living there and training for horse races, and then the horse auctions are there where horses sell for millions of dollars, especially if they won the Derby. And yeah, so that would be, and historically Kentucky was a border state, so we actually never seceded from the Union, which is interesting. And I just learned this, that we declared neutrality at the start of the Civil War, kind of like Switzerland during World War II. So yeah, so it's odd. Sometimes the state is considered Midwest, sometimes it's considered the South. It depends who you ask.
Mm-hmm. Going
so now you know everything about Kentucky.
so going back to you said that you were sort of picked on in a way for being Jewish. Was this more of a persecution sort of thing, or was it more of just a joke?
Both. Like, my friends would joke about it, and like they still do. Like in the South Park sort of way. It's just because my best gay friend and I, our way of teasing each other affectionately is to say the most outlandish, like, horrifically awful things possible, but in a very exaggerated manner, so we both know it's tongue-in-cheek, and, we find that amusing. And so I have that dynamic of humor sometimes with a couple of friends, and I did in high school, in middle school with my friend Jack. Beyond that, no. I was only condemned to hell once, and that guy, yes, it was in the mean-spirited sense, but he was a bit nuts. He got expelled from school because he set a vending machine on fire. Yeah, so I think that would have been the exception, but it, you know, you can see in people's eyes, like when you tell them, oh, I'm Jewish, and they're like, oh, so you don't go to church, and I'm like, no. So it's a bit more unspoken, and I'm assuming they are, you know, talking more about it behind your back than, you know, because it's Southern hospitality, so you have to be nice in public.
Mm-hmm. And how did you like going with being sort of picked on, albeit a bit jokingly, about being Jewish? Was this sort of the same way with you being gay?
Yeah, actually much more so. So I like to say that people knew I was gay before I did, and also before I knew what even gay was. So yeah, I mean, I think the most common thing is to be called a fag. And I was mostly in high school and maybe the end of middle school. There were so many things going on. I mean, I was at first glance, like, incredibly nerdy. And I think that qualifies for being gay, called gay. And then on top of it, though, but fairly effeminate. But interestingly, again, sorry if I'm going on about this, but the people who actually called me faggot, like, in high school, were also the ones who, when I came back to visit after graduating college, when I was working at my first job on the East Coast, they were, like, the first question they asked, because I just started hanging out with, you know, I was visiting on a vacation, so... like, I hung out with old high school acquaintances, and, like, the ones who actually picked on me were the ones who were asking me if I had a partner and if I was, you know, how I felt about being gay in high school. And it was just really, like, cathartic, but also, like, incredibly odd and funny. And it was, like, a very, like, sweet ending to, like, that skeleton, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would be called, like, faggot. And I once had a beer poured down on me. And then in college, I got, like, harassed, slashed. Like, I wouldn't call it a gay bashing because, like, nothing physical. But we did get eggs thrown at us because I was holding hands with my boyfriend at the time on campus. So, yeah.
So you were talking about, like, this experience with sort of homophobia at UW. How do you feel like the UW's acceptance towards the LGBTQ community is, like, what their attitude is?
It's interesting. Coming back to the Midwest after living on the East Coast and a little bit on the West Coast, and then growing up in the South, it's an interesting mix. I think a lot of it has to do with age rather than with liberal versus conservative. I think just I notice more as I'm 26 now, I guess. And I think between ages 18 and 22, which tend to be the majority of the gay folks in Madison, debatably, but at least the ones that I interact with, it's a time when that age group is, like, defining themselves and trying to figure out their identity, and that's basically what I was doing when I was 17 and 18. And so I think that makes it harder to have, like, it's not harder to, it makes it a different community. It's like it's a young community that's figuring out what it is. And so you coming in as, like, a out gay guy who has, like, 10 years job experience being gay, like, it feels a bit, it can be isolating, but just because I don't think they're as many out middle-aged gay men as what I've been used to when I lived on the coast. But I would say the people I have met are fairly accepting. There are a lot more closeted people, but I don't know whether that's because of age or because of the culture of Madison. I mean, you can just go on Craigslist and see every single one says, I want married, I want discreet. It's like, Those would be turnoffs, so I'm not exactly sure why when they became a good thing to be married. So
when you said earlier, you referenced the East Coast. Do you mean Kentucky or?
No, Philadelphia. I lived in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
I consider Kentucky quasi South, quasi Midwest, or Ohio Valley.
When did you move to Philadelphia?
So I graduated high school in 2003, left Kentucky, went to St. Louis, Missouri. 4 years later, during summers when I was in college, I went to DC for a summer and then to San Francisco for another summer. And then I graduated in 07, moved to Philadelphia for 2 years, and then came to Madison in 2009, and I've been here since then.
So what do you feel are the main differences between all of these places that you visited and like the attitudes towards the LGBTQ community? Like, are there any sort of overarching themes that you've, or overarching differences that you've noticed?
I think the culture here, it reminds me, it's a slower pace of life. I think it's a lot more family focused because the population doesn't move around as much as on the coast, where like basically the entire population moves around. Like every year you'll have friends come and go in a big city. I suspect Minneapolis is also like that, and Chicago definitely is. But like, I don't, it's a very, like, I've noticed, like, there is an, at least I only can speak for gay men, because like that's been my friend group just incidentally since like 2007. I used to have all female heterosexual friends, and then it somehow switched to all gay men. They're less out people. It's like the whole, you see a lot of guys who think they're, you know, or identify as bisexual, but some of them actually are, and then some of them, like, I think because of the culture, I think, does reflect on the identities that you end up having. And so I do think that if most of the gay men or men who are bi and discreet and masculine and married were plopped down in San Francisco for a year, they would all end up being gay and single. And I think that's just like the cultural context. So I'm trying to think if I could, is that answering the question?
Oh yeah, that's perfectly fine. That's a good answer. Now I'm just going to sort of go back to we talked about earlier, you being Jewish, how your religion, how has there been any identity conflicts of any sort between you being gay and your religion, or not so much?
Negative associations, but I mean, I was, so like in Judaism, the spectrum of liberal to conservative basically goes, like Orthodox Judaism, hardcore Orthodox Jews are like, no, like they interpret the Leviticus passage literally. So there's no such thing as homosexuality, and they're basically the equivalent of Christian fundamentalists. They're just Jewish fundamentalists. And then at the opposite end of the spectrum, you have Reform Judaism and Reconstructionist, which is basically like Unitarians, and maybe a little more focused than the Unitarian Church. But anyway, you know, it's anything goes. Judaism is whatever it means to you, and it's all about acceptance, you know, lovey-dovey stuff. And so I was brought up Reform, so it never really was an issue, with the exception of Jewish summer camp. But I think it was just because the people, which incidentally was in Waupaca, near Appleton. And so I came to Wisconsin every summer between like ages 8 and 14. And it was before Queer Eye for the Straight Guy made gay being like made gay cool. At least that was when, I think that's when gay started to become cool, when like in the third or second season of Queer Eye. And prior to that, at least in my personal experiences, attitude, my associations with Judaism and homosexuality were very negative, and I strongly disliked being around kids who would tease me and pick on me at summer camp for being effeminate and not dating women and fitting into like the very standard like Jewish boy meets nice Jewish girl at nice Jewish summer camp and, you know, has cute summer romance and plays house, you know. So that was my association.
Yeah, and like at these summer camps, like what were sort of, you, like you said, like the kids like teased you and about being gay and that you didn't fit like the quote unquote Jewish stereotype of that sort. But how did the counselors sort of see this, or what were they sort of the same as the kids like?
So like, I think this is also like, I didn't actually know what gay was until I was 16. Which is, it's really hard to explain that, but like as a concept, I didn't know it existed. I just thought it was something you called someone as an insult. I didn't actually know that there were such a thing as gay people or gay culture or gay anything. I just thought that there were guys who got called fag. And so I was under the impression that, like, you were straight, and the fact that I had these weird, like, attractions to other men, I didn't have a label for it, and, like, I didn't understand why, like, I was sexually attracted to men and romantically attracted to them, and so I just assumed that... So to answer your question about camp counselors, it wasn't ever talked about. Like, I had never heard it discussed in a serious way. It was just the name. It was basically a name-calling term. Yeah.
Okay. So, like, when you did sort of begin to identify yourself as gay, did this negative connotation you had about being gay, did this sort of affect like how you thought about yourself?
In high school it did. And once I started meeting other gay people, it was like terrifying and exciting, because it opened up this entire possibility and all these unresolved questions, like, where do I find gay people? Like, where do they hang out? Will they, you know, how can I tell? Like, how do I tell them that I'm gay without other people knowing? So that, because it was incredibly terrifying. And so I would tell people and then I would take it back. And I, wait, I forgot your question.
So how did your identifying as gay sort of affect your self-perception?
Yeah, so I knew it's kind of stereotypical. Like, I knew I was different, but then I didn't really have the concept of what gay was. And then as soon as I gradually dawned on me and what gay was, I guess just by like experience, and like it never occurred to me that there was any significance to the fact that I had been fooling around with guys for a while. And so maybe this is why it kind of sounds like Madison. And so I was like 16 when I first like met a guy I knew for sure was gay because he had told me, and who was happy and well adjusted and like really fun to be around. And of course I immediately got a crush on him, you know, because like you want, and like I wanted to be as cool as him and like really hip and wear tight jeans, and he was wearing them before they were really like popular, and I was a nerd and had acne, and it was, I mean, like being gay like was this like mysterious, like amazingly cool slash terrifying like thing that I had to figure out. And then I accepted the label, but like it was anxiety provoking because I wanted to meet gay people, like I wanted to figure out what it meant, and at the same time I didn't want anyone else to know, so it was a bit, I was conflicted and anxious.
Mm-hmm. And so you said you didn't want people to know, but how did it sort of go from there? How did it start getting around that?
Well, in retrospect, I'd say everyone knew, but but because what happened was, I think it was also part of the aging process, and like once everyone goes to college, they immediately meet other gay people just by like getting, you know, in my undergrad it was like 7,000 people, so just a cumulative mass, like there'll be a sizable chunk who are gay. And another part of it was like seeing gay resources for the first time, like a gay center and somewhere that wasn't my parents' house, because they were very strict, and so I didn't know there were gay centers, actually. I had never known that such a thing existed, because I grew up in the 1950s. And my parents are living in the 1950s, basically. I forgot the question.
How did people around you start, did you start telling people that you were gay, or did you sort of like tell a friend and then like that sort of got out, or how did it sort of become like quote unquote socially like official?
So I started living a double life. I had gay friends and didn't tell anyone about it. And I would try to stay away from anyone I knew who I thought knew that I was, or who thought I was straight. I'd try to keep the group separate, and I didn't tell anyone who I had known prior to hanging out with gay friends. And then all the new friends and this was all in my first freshman year of college. So like basically the student activities fair was like the beginning of September. I couldn't go to the gay table. I was too afraid, because it was out in a quad and it was a giant circle of tables. And so I like bypassed this entire side of the square, the gay side of the square, because there was one gay table among like 50 other tables, but that was the gay side. So I stayed away from that, but then I emailed them and got on the list, and I went to my first gay activity, which that was terrifying, and it was just to watch Chicago and like in a random part of campus, but be that as it may, I guess I lived a double life, and I tried to avoid telling anybody for as long as possible until some of them were like, "You're gay, right?" And then at that point, I would say, yeah. Because up for them, like all the guys I had been sort of dating, I had just made up female names for. And then I could discuss the same things with people who I thought I was straight.
Do you feel that you're comfortable today with who you are and what you identify with?
Meeting
other people?
So I went to the opposite extreme the following semester. So that was my first semester. And then I started taking every single gay class offered on campus and like threw myself into it and became a hardcore activist within like a month. So like probably by February of that of my freshman year of college, like, I was, like, running around campus with petitions against, like, anti-gay constitutional amendments. Because 04 was the big year when, like, 15 to 20 states passed their marriage bans. Because Massachusetts legalized in 03. And so, like, I was really, really hardcore. And then I think after my freshman year of college, I came out to my parents during the summertime on a note. And I was studying abroad. And then I think I fanned the flames, and then I've been fairly comfortable since then. So
your parents, like you said, your parents were sort of strict, and you came out to them on a note while you were studying abroad. How do you feel they took that?
It was entertaining. I mean, I think it says something, the fact that they were the last ones I told, because at that point I had started telling the people who weren't new friends that I had met at college. At the time I didn't want to tell them, but they had started to wonder why I was hanging out with all these gay men, even back in Kentucky. When I came home for the summer, I was trying to make new friends in Kentucky as well. Then I was like, well, I need to get this over with. So I left them a note on their bedside table and then flew off for study abroad in Europe. And once they found the note, my dad was like, oh, I'm this very accepting person. I had a gay roommate in medical school. So he was under the impression that he was fine. And my mother was like incredibly upset, like not in an angry way, but she was like, I can't eat, I can't sleep, it just is so sad, blah, blah, blah. And it's hard to remember, but like I do remember a lot of like heated phone conversations, like for about a year. And like, cause I was like, I'd really try to like, they say, you know, being loud and proud isn't rubbing it in someone's face, but I think I went one step beyond it and like would purposely provoke them in order to create a debate. And so I think after a year of that, they kind of were so like oversaturated with like my crusade against heterosexism that like they had been like pushed so far, like they were like by default like sort of accepting even if they went back to middle ground just because they had heard me say the word gay so many times. So yeah, and then like fast forward 2 years, and then once I had a boyfriend and started talking about him, then my dad discovered he was homophobic, and that was like, I don't know, like 8 months after I told them. And then my mom actually became the accepting one during my first breakup, because then she could be like, oh, you got your heart broken by a boy, and then we bonded over her first breakup. And long story short, 2 years later, they were rallying at the Capitol for gay rights and yelling at me for not being more involved. It's a big transition, but it took them about 2 years.
Mm-hmm. So that seems like a very interesting sort of dynamic that you have with your family, like how it sort of went from them being sort of not necessarily the most accepting to sort of accepting, and then a change up, and then they're all accepting.
Yeah.
So how would you what do you think sort of made them come to terms with, not necessarily come to terms with, but like accept you as being gay?
Because I think they started to look back retrospectively and start to fill in a lot of the blanks, you know, that, and it just, it made sense, you know, I was the artistic effeminate kid, and, but also things like my, like, what seemed to be crushes on other men, and, like, even as a little kid, and so that made sense. I mean, my mother, like, so on one hand, she's, like, sexually, like, we did not discuss sex in my parents' house. They showed, my dad's a doctor, so, like, he could, like, medicalize it and, like, give, like, gave me, like, anatomy books and stuff. But, like, we didn't discuss sexuality. And then I was taking all these women's studies classes. And so, oh wait, I forgot the question.
How did your parents sort of become more accepting of?
So the boyfriend piece helped out a lot because then it was something they could see common ground on. My dad just, you know, he vented and grumbled his way through his homophobia. And then as my mother slowly, like, was like, oh, like, now I have, like, this, and she's an artist, so, like, she had gay males around her all the time, and it never, like, it was always, like, something they would tease, you know, like, make fun of gay people in front of me. I remember when I came out, my mother was like, this is probably the most honest thing I've ever heard, with respect to homophobia, but my mother was like, but now we can't make fun of, like, our wedding planner anymore, or my friend, my artist friends anymore, because you're gay. And I was like, and that's a bad thing, you know. And so, like, we, you know, we had a lot of conversations, and I think they just, and then I like took them to PFLAG once, and so that helped them a little for, like, a day. And then they read a lot, and it just, and then it's, you know, ultimately I think it just ceased to be the most important issue because it didn't disrupt, like, any continuity with respect to who I was. Like, it made more sense, and then they could actually see I was a lot happier, because I'd been a pretty depressed adolescent. And then they could also, there were, like, more pressing issues, like my brother started to get into trouble with some stuff, and, like, that became the family, like, problem, I guess, at that point. And, like, I just, like, gradually, like, they just got used to it.
Okay. So I heard you mentioned PFLAG. What could you explain for the recording what exactly this is?
The Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. I think it, well, the history is on Google, and they have a website, .org, PFLAG. So in essence, PFLAG has, it's a support group for depressed moms and dads when their children tell them that they're gay or trans, or bisexual. And it's, or extended family members. And basically, my parent, so it's a support group where parents can talk to other parents and, like, realize that they're not the only ones who are, you know, afraid for their children, afraid of their children, and now they have to confront their own prejudices and realize that by going through it with other people, they are not alone. And I think that's probably the thing that really makes a difference for both sides of the line, where the parents and the LGBT offspring realize that they're not alone by meeting other people of that group, of, you know, meeting other LGBT peers, and then the parents meeting other parents, and finding that common bond helps them realize that it's not a huge deal most of the time.
Okay. One more question. Is there anything that you would like me to ask you or that you would like to talk about?
Not that I can think of. I'm a little loopy, but I feel like I've spewed out enough.
Okay, well, if you have any questions for me later, feel free to let me know, and we can have it off or on the record. So with that, we will end this interview.